Cancer by Boris Vian. 1. Jacques Teagarden was suffering in bed. He'd caught a cold playing his churlish flute in a barred draught. Because times were hard, the chamber orchestra had agreed to rehearse in an ordinary hall. Although the musicians weathered the inclement times, their health frequently was in jeopardy. Jacques Teagarden didn't feel well. His head stretched in one direction and his brain in another. In the intervening hollow, foreign bodies slowly introduced themselves. Fluid, parasitic thoughts and a sharp invasive pain similar to acid in the throat. From time to time, Jacques Teagarden coughed and the foreign bodies collided sharply against the lining of his skull. They surfaced abruptly like waves in a bathtub and fell back with the grinding sound of trampled grasshoppers. A bubble burst here and there, and small white beams, soft as the inside of a spider, starred the bony vault swept away by the backwash. After each attack, Jacques Teagarden waited in anguish for the next cough. He counted the seconds by an hourglass on his night table. He was tormented because he couldn't practice his flute. His lips would grow flabby, his fingers round, and he'd have to start all over again. The churlish flute requires a terrifying willpower because it's learned with difficulty, and what's learned is fast forgotten. In his head, he practiced the cadenza he'd been working on from the 18th symphonic movement in B double flat. The trills of measures 56 and 57 heightened the pain. He felt an attack coming and raised his hand to his mouth to hold it back. It mounted, gained volume in his trachea, and issued in large, turbulent fountains. Jacques Teagarden's face turned purple and his eyes filled with blood. He dabbed at them with a corner of a red handkerchief chosen expressly to hide the stain. 2. The stairwell hummed. Mounted on metallic rails, the banister vibrated like a gong. Surely it was the landlady bringing him some lime blossom tea. In time, tea congests the prostate, but Jacques Teagarden didn't drink it often. And doubtless he'd escaped the operation. She had only one story to climb. She was a beautiful, large woman of 35. Her husband, a German prisoner for many months, had laid barbed wire as soon as he returned, figuring it was his turn to confine others. The entire day he fenced in cattle and rarely showed much sign of life. She opened the door without knocking and flashed Jacques a big smile. She held a blue faience pot and a bowl, which she placed on the night table. Her half-opened house dress gaped on mossy shadows when she leaned over to arrange her pillows, and Jacques smelled the strong, pleasant odour of her bearded mystery. He blinked because the odour struck him, and with a finger he pointed at the transgression. "Excuse me, but..." he interrupted himself, prey to a violent attack. The landlady, misunderstanding, rubbed her lower belly. "It's your thing," he concluded. So that he'd laugh, she seized the hilarious object in both hands and imitated the sound of a duck foraging in the mud. But not wishing Jacques to cough, she quickly closed her dress again. A weak smile relaxed on the boy's face. Normally, I rather like it, he explained, excusing himself, but my head's so full of noises, sounds, and odours already. Should I pour you some lime blossom tea? She asked with maternal concern. As she lifted to pour the pot, her dress reopened. Jacques teased the tiny beast with the end of his spoon, and suddenly it stuck. He laughed so hard that his chest tore open. Bent in two and suffocating, he couldn't even feel the soft, rapid slaps she made on his back to stop him from coughing. I'm just a fool, she upbraided herself for having made him laugh. I ought to have realised you don't have the harp to play. She gave him back the spoon and held out the bowl. He sipped the fallow-tasting tea, stirring it all the while to mix up the sugar. Then he swallowed two aspirin. Thank you. I'm going to try to sleep now, he said. I'll bring some more tea later. The landlady folded the empty bowl and found its pot in three. Three. He woke with a start. The aspirin had made him perspire. According to the Archimedes principle, he'd lost weight equal to that of the displaced sweat, and his body levitated above the mattress, dragging along the sheets and blanket. The air of draft, the draft of air which this produced, rippled the pond of sweat on which he floated, and small waves plashed on his hips. He took the plug from his mattress, and the sweat poured into the mattress spring. Slowly, his body descended and reposed on the sheet that steamed like horse urine. The sweat left a gummy deposit, and in his effort to get up and lean on the spongy pillow, he slipped. Once more, his head vibrated, a hummed accompaniment. Millstones formed behind his brain and ground the substances that had always bothered him in the void of his skull. He raised his hands gently, examined his head with caution and felt the buckling. His fingers slid over the occiput to the swollen parietals, touched his forehead, followed the abrupt edge of his eye sockets, reaching his temples, then returned to the malar bones that gave slightly under pressure. Indeed, Jacques Teagarden wished he could see the exact formation of his skull. Some skulls are so pretty in profile, so well-balanced, so round. They'd taken an x-ray during his sickness last year, and all the women he'd shown it to readily became his mistresses. The back protrusion and inflation of the parietals worried him. The churlish flute, perhaps. His hands returned to the occiput, lingering at the juncture of his neck where the socket turned soundlessly, but with difficulty. Heaving a sigh of helplessness, he let his arms fall to his sides, rapidly moving his buttocks from right to left and making a small, comfortable hollow in the soft but hardening crust. He didn't dare move too much. With a single movement, the sweat in the box springs sloshed from left to right. When he propped himself on his right arm, he threw the bed off balance. He was obliged to tie a large strap of unbleached muslin around his back. It barely held him up. When Jacques leaned on the other arm, the bed turned completely around, and the neighbour below tapped on the ceiling with the butt end of a smelly leg of mutton. The odour seeped through the floor cracks, causing Jacques to raise his head. He didn't want to spill the box springs onto the floor. The baker from the corner gave him a good price for the sweat. He poured it into bottles labelled Sweat from the Front, and people bought it to wash down the 99% burnt bread of the service corps. I'm coughing less, he thought. His chest regularly relaxed, and the wheezing in his lungs was barely perceptible. With caution, he extended his left arm and seized his flute from the chair, putting it in bed near him. Again, his hands reached for his head, slid along the occiput to the swollen parietals, touched his forehead, and followed the abrupt edge of the eye socket. Four. 11 litres, the baker said. I lost a few litres, Teagarden apologised. The bed springs aren't too watertight. It isn't pure. To count it as 10 litres would be more accurate. You'll sell it as 11 anyway. Naturally, said the baker, but I feel guilty and that should count for something. I need the money, Jacques said. I haven't played for 3 days. Well, I don't have much money either. A 29-horsepower car costs a lot to keep and the maids ruin me. What can you give me? Jacques asked. My God, I'm offering you 3 francs a litre and 11 count as 10, the baker said. Try harder, that isn't much. All right, the baker agreed. I'll go up to 33 francs, but it's a swindle. I'll take it, Jacques said. The baker pulled out 6 denominations of 7 francs each from his wallet. Give me back 9 francs. I only have 10, Jacques said. That will close the deal, said the baker. He pocketed the money, picked up the pail and walked toward the door. Try and make me some more, he urged. I don't have a fever. Too bad, the baker said, and left. Jacques' hands reached for his head again and caressed his deformed bones. He tried to lift up his skull, anxious to know its exact weight, but he'd have to wait until he was completely cured. His neck hurt him too much. 5. Painfully, Jacques threw off the covers. His thin legs, wrinkled from 5 days of rest, stretched before him. He considered them absent-mindedly, attempted to smooth them with the flat of his hand, then sat on the edge of the bed. With effort, he got up. Because of his legs, he'd lost 5 good centimetres. He threw out his torso and his ribs cracked. The cold left a few traces. His nightshirt fell in long, flaccid pleats over his furrowed buttocks, and his softened lips and swollen fingers no longer allowed him to play the churlish flute. He knew it right away. Beaten, he let himself fall into a chair, head in his hands, fingers mechanically feeling his temples and heavy forehead. 6. The orchestra conductor climbed the staircase. He stopped a minute in front of the door, read the placard, and entered. Hello, he said. So you're feeling better? I got up a moment ago, Jacques told him. I'm weak. It smells strange in the stairwell, the conductor said. It's the landlady. She never closes her dress. It smells good, like wild rabbit. Yes, Jacques agreed. When are you coming back to play with us? We have to discuss a few things. I don't want to play in the hall anymore. After all, chamber music is played in a chamber. You aren't going to say that it's my fault that you caught a cold, the conductor said. After all, we all played in the hall. I know, but I was sitting in the draught, and that's why you didn't catch anything. That's a lie. Besides, you always had a poor constitution. I know, but I don't like being sick. It's my prerogative. Then I'll have to find someone else, the conductor said. We can't play with someone who's always dissatisfied. But I nearly died! You piss me off. I didn't come here to waste my time. When can you play again? I don't know. I'm weak, Jacques said. You're exaggerating. It's not professional. I'm going to ask Albert to replace you. Pay me the 2 jobs you owe me. I have to pay the landlady. I don't have it on me. I'm going to see Albert. You've got a bad temper.
When will you pay me? Jacques asked.
Oh, I'll pay you. I'm going now. Jacques' fingers wandered over his forehead and his eyes were half closed. 4 kilos, maybe? 7. The small alcohol stove hummed valiantly. Provoked by the noise, the water quivered in the aluminium pan. It was too much water for such a little stove, but Jacques had come to the end. He waited on a chair. To distract himself, he practiced a little on his flute. Constantly, he missed the B-flat by 2 centimetres, but finally caught it and crushed it between 2 fingers. He was glad that the note had returned, but he stopped because the pain in his head also returned and the water started to boil. Maybe more than 4 kilos, he said to himself. We'll see. He took a large knife and cut off his head, dropping it into the boiling water with a few crystals to clean it without altering its weight. He died before he'd finished, because this was in 1945 and medicine wasn't as advanced as it is today. Jacques Teagarden mounted to heaven in a large round cloud, never having a single reason to go elsewhere.